Dennis Quaid is one of the most famous actors in the world. He's been in about 150 movies spanning almost 50 years, and he is at the same time a really interesting and engaged person with a lot to say, who thinks a lot and thinks freely. He's also an accomplished musician. But he has a project coming up that you probably ought to know about. We thought it was definitely worth telling you about. And so we're grateful that Dennis Quaid is joining us on set right now. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tucker. We're so glad to be here.
So, I mean, I could ask you a million questions, but I want to get right to the project that's coming up right now about our power grid that you did. Can you just give us a quick overview of what this is and why did you do it?
It's called Grid Down, Power Up. And it's about an issue which concerned me really for quite some time. They did a segment on 60 Minutes about this, but there is a 100% probability that our sun, generating what they call a GMD, which is a solar storm, that hits our Earth and the magnetic field that we have around the Earth and can fry everything that is electric above the ground, including our entire grid.
And this would happen organically, naturally? That's just what the sun does?
It has happened. There was they call it a Carrington event, which happened in, I think it was 1859. And at that time, basically, we had telegraph lines that, as far as electricity goes. And it fried our entire telegraph system that was set up, had to be replaced. And
the entire thing?
The entire thing. And so imagine what that would do now with a very large storm, which there's a 100% chance of it happening. And that was a 100-year event, they call that one.
And I'm not good at math, but in
the trillions of dollars that it would take to replace all that, plus we wouldn't even get to spend those trillions of dollars, because it would take out not only the electricity, but, you know, all of our entire infrastructure and our society runs our electricity. We don't know how to live without it. You know, you turn on, there wouldn't be any water in your tap. You couldn't get gas for your car because the whole system is broken down. Everything that we rely upon would be gone. The food would melt in our refrigerators. There would be, and they predict within a year, about 90% of the population would be dead from starvation, disease, or, you know, people, it gets back to the Stone Age again.
Killing each other.
Yeah.
Well, that's shocking.
Yeah, so
a bit of information.
That really lifts your day, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I'm adding that to the Armageddon file,
but,
that's growing.
Nobody's really talking about it. And in fact, President Trump actually signed an executive order to harden our grid to protect ourselves against an event like this happening. Obama tried to get that going as well. And it's stuck in these regulatory agencies that, you know, and lobbyists, because money needs to be spent. Most of our grid power companies are privately owned, and you can understand them not wanting to spend money on something that might occur. But this is definitely going to occur.
And so it would mean, and this is not from a foreign adversary. This is just a solar cycle or
well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, but this is, yeah, but we're starting with just what nature might do.
Yeah, this is not what you call an enemy. This is, you know, our, the sun that we rely upon every day and these solar storms that happen. And they happen with, you know, frequency. And everybody's seen, you know, pictures of the sun where, you know, the storm is happening and these flares come out and they're ejected out into the solar system. And we just, you know, like in packets. And we, I think it was 2014, we barely missed one by 5 days that went across our path of orbit around the sun. And it's going to happen. And then, you know, once it hits the Earth, there's a 50% probability of it either being us or the Eastern Hemisphere, who's ever exposed to that's the sun.
So is there anything that you can do? I mean, could you harden our electrical
grid? Yes, there are simple things that we could actually do that could be built in that would, you know, not only for the military, which we'll get to, but civilian infrastructure to protect it, that relatively inexpensive compared to what it would cost if an event like this happened. And overall, over time, it'd probably be about $100 billion, about the same that we just gave to Ukraine.
So,
you know, to protect them from the Russians, and it'd be money spent. Plus, also, the process of doing this, it's like a space program. You find out all kinds of other things that actually help society and advance us in our technology. But they're basically relays. Protective relays that could be put at our substations and transformers, that an event like this happens, kind of similar to kind of a surge protector that you have in your computer, that sense that, you know, there's a surge like that, and cut it off to protect it frying our transformers.
Would, pardon my total ignorance on this topic, I'm embarrassed, but would such a solar storm hurt people or just electrical components?
No, it doesn't hurt people. In fact, it's only like the, you know, transistors and, you know, anything electrical, and you can melt it. These transformers that we have, I think there's you remember the blackout that happened in New York not too long ago, and it was trees that were hanging over a power line just like that, which caused a surge of power and upset the balance. And it all relies on these transformers that get overheated, and if you need to replace one, you don't just replace one. They weigh about 500,000 pounds to begin with to get them. It takes, if you want another one, it takes 2 years to get one. We just don't have them sitting around just ready to replace either. It's really difficult. It takes time. And if you had a situation where your supply chain's cut off, and, you know, we get some of them from China, by the way, and it's just tough to do.
If I can just ask you a dumb question, so this, an event like this happened in 1859, mm-hmm. and it took out our entire telegraph system.
Mm.
So this has been known for quite some time.
Yeah.
And yet we built a system that's vulnerable to it.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, the storms come in varying intensities. That Carrington event, must have been, you know, upwards of like 85 volts per meter. I think that's what the figure is, the way they measure it. And our system is built to take on like 8 volts per kilometer. I mean, 8 kilometers. It won't handle it. That's what Obama did when he, by executive order, wanted to harden our system. He wanted it brought up to that. And the regulatory people, NERC and FERC, took it and wound up just protecting our infrastructure to 8 volts. And so it's like 10 times less. There was, because of these other storms that came through, you know, one I think was like 12, another one was this or that, and so it wasn't a worst case scenario, in other words, that they prepared for. And that's what you need to prepare for.
Of course.
Of course.
You're describing what we used to call, when we believed in God, acts of God.
Yeah.
Probably are acts of God, but whatever. But things that no human can control.
Right.
But there's a
force
whole...
majeure, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a whole other category, though, of attacks from adversaries or terrorists.
Yes,
or
that's the other thing.
And what are those?
Another scary thing. I think, you know, the world, as far as the danger in the world today, is much greater than when I was growing up. I grew up at the height of the Cold War, where, you know, we had duck and cover.
Yeah.
I lived in Houston, which was within that circle during the Cuban Missile Crisis of getting hit, and probably would have been hit, and you know, by the bomb. And it's scarier today than it was then. At least we had mutual annihilation, and we had deterrence, you know, based on that, that we wouldn't pull the trigger because the other, your adversary was going to destroy you too. And today, you know, that club has grown to where it's not only Russia, the United States, it's North Korea.
Yeah, Pakistan.
That everybody knows. Pakistan, India, Iran.
Yeah.
Which, they believe they already have the nuke. They just don't have the delivery system for it that could reach the United States. And,
Iran has a nuclear weapon?
I think they do.
Yeah.
You know, the Russians have been helping them out. And if they don't have one, they're going to have one within 6 months to a year. And it's really, we've been approaching it, well, they don't have the delivery system. They don't have the, you know, the ICBMs that can deliver that all the way to the United States. They definitely could hit Israel, though, who they're committed to destroying. And, but they also have their terror organizations. And it's gotten to the point now where it's getting so condensed. You know, these suitcase dirty bombs, whatever they are, you could definitely rig one of those up and hook it to a Scud missile, put it on a cargo ship just off the United States coast, send it up to a certain altitude, explode it, and what they call a super EMP, which is electromagnetic pulse, which is the same thing as a geothermal event, you know, with the sun. It's if you send up a missile, a nuclear bomb on it, it exploded at 400 kilometers above the Earth in space, basically. You won't see it. You won't see the explosion because it's in a vacuum of space. You won't hear it. No people will be killed. But the gamma rays, which are thrown out from that, would encompass most of the United States and take out this very same grid, and within which could cause a power outage all across the United States up to months, even a year. And we'd have the same scenario that we described before.
I mean, you hate even to game it out, but like if that happened, if huge parts of the United States had no power for a year, I mean, that'd be an extinction event for a while.
Like, they've done a study, and 90% of the population would be dead within a year. You know, during this Carrington event, I mean, one thing, we didn't rely on electricity, you know, and everybody had a cow if you wanted milk, and you had a horse if you wanted to drive. You know, your car wouldn't work. What do you do? Your telephone doesn't work. There's no way to inform the public about, you know,
anything.
So you kind of messed up.
So I mean, that in some ways seems far more effective than nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, you're not killing people, and so that makes the decision to use them a little, you know, it's not
easier.
you don't have to wrestle with your morals,
right? There's no smoking hole at Hiroshima.
Yeah, exactly. And just like, and because there are so many actors doing this, and there, you know, there are terrorist subgroups as well, who do you retaliate against if it's done from a cargo ship and you don't even know where it came from? So who was the perpetrator? And who do you retaliate against? And yes, the military has hardened most of their infrastructure when it comes to this, but they get their electricity, 90% of their electricity comes, 99% of their electricity comes from civilian infrastructure. So how long is that going to last? And
so do you think when it's magnified EMP attacks would take out a lot? I mean, what, like most civilian power plants?
Yeah, just one, what they call a super EMP, and that has to do with the altitude where it is exploded, you know, from the center of that covers a certain area, whereas if you were lower down, you would only be able to cover that much area.
Yes.
Because it spreads out in a circle. So, and it just fries everything.
So why, I mean, I know there are a lot of things to worry about.
Yeah.
A lot of things are failing at once, obviously, but this seems like you might want to move it toward the top of the list of things to worry
about. Yeah, I would think so. I really would think so, but it's, and indeed the, you know, the Russians and the Chinese have done so much more to harden and to protect their infrastructure than we have. And so it gets down to that whole thing about survivability, you know, being able to survive an attack and to attack someone and then being able to survive when they retaliate. And they've got that going for them. And it also makes somebody like, you know, Iran, who it's a fraction of what their military budget is, and they know they can't defeat the United States. But I mean, even a simple terror group, you get their hands on a Scud missile and a nuclear device, you can really do some damage. And I don't know why that our government has not been informing us more about this. Back during the Cold War, when I was a kid, I was, you know, in the fourth grade, we kids were informed about what could happen, what to do if something happened, at least that. And also, let's get something done.
I mean, I don't think the average person has any idea that this threat exists.
Yeah. No, they don't. The vast majority of the people don't.
Where is the climate lobby on this? I mean, they're very involved in trying to remake the grid and
right.
You know, change our sources of energy, and they're energy experts. But is this something that they're taking up?
No, not to my knowledge, no.
Or windmills?
This really definitely, this has to, well, they would be affected too, you know, of course. But it's, you know, that's all about the fuel that comes, you know, to the power agency, or, you know, whether it be coal or wind or whatever it is. But if you knock out these relay stations, the power can't go anywhere. Just fries everything.
So this does suggest, I mean, our country's population is clustered in cities.
Yeah.
Those probably aren't going to fare as well.
No. It'd be easier to live in the country, of course, and people who live in the country would probably have better ideas, better knowledge of how to survive after an event like this. But it's a scary proposition. I mean, there needs to be education, and there needs to be something done about it, and done about it pretty quick. I mean, these protective relays that could be installed in the transformers, starting with that. I mean, we have the technology. We know how to do this. It's not something mysterious that we have to get involved in. What we do need is something like a Manhattan Project that we had back during World War II, where, you know, the Germans, we knew that the Germans were trying to develop a bomb, and so we got there quicker. And somebody to cut through all the bureaucratic red tape and be vested with the authority to get this done. We could do it in a couple of years.
So you mentioned FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that be the agency that would be thinking about this?
Yes, you would think that, but that's not the way it works. Obama, like, sent this to Congress, I mean, to get it done, and then it gets caught in FERC and NERC because they're controlled by the lobbies of the energy lobbies that it's about, they'd have to spend money, and which they don't necessarily want to do, because, you know, it costs a lot. Yes, it would cost a lot. I think the government should help in this. And there's so many of them, too, scattered across the United States. You know, they're locally owned, most of the energy companies. There's an energy company in South Carolina that is really doing something about it. And there have been some cases where, you know, we've had energy companies that are making moves to protect the grid, but that's only one little part of the grid. You know, it's when it comes down to it, they depend on the one next door to them and the one next door to them.
It would cure the AI problem pretty quick, though, right? Yeah. You'd have no AI with no electricity.
Yeah, exactly.
But you wonder, there's all these, I mean, a huge part of the American economy is based on digital commerce, digital innovation. I mean, this is being...
Right. Financial system is going to break
exactly.
down. Transportation breaks down. Your water doesn't work. Food delivery is gone. Your telephones don't work. You go back to, basically, we go back to that Carrington event. The world goes back to 1859, and we're all in the dark, and the lights are out.
So you would think that all these other sectors of the economy would be lobbying, because they all are dependent on electricity. Mm-hmm. Everybody's dependent on electricity. So if I'm Google, or if I'm Microsoft running AI or
right.
whatever, like I need a,
yes.
you know, I would be
yeah,
lobbying.
Especially
for
you, you've got to have that. And plus also the effects of the gamma rays, you know, upon these microchips that they're melted. Actually, you know who the largest manufacturer of vacuum tubes is? Russia.
Vacuum tubes?
Vacuum tubes. Russia and China. They are still in the business of manufacturing vacuum tubes.
Vacuum tubes like
they
the
are
vacuum
far
TV.
More resistant. They are far more resistant to these gamma rays.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Than the microchips.
Do they make
the old analog technology is you know would work with internet dial up, you know.
Are they making horse carriages too? They probably should
yeah,
be.
They probably should be, yeah.
So, okay, well, you just blew my mind.
Yeah, I want to go out and join the cavalry, I guess.
So what kind of reaction are you getting when you tell people this?
A mouth agape, kind of like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody hears about it. And it's something we don't like to think about. But it's, yeah, I think people think of it in terms of an asteroid, which is on its way to destroy the Earth.
Right.
You know, that seems like a very remote, in fact, is very remote. But this is, you know, whether from the sun or a bad actor, this is something that 100% chance it's going to happen. And we are just no way prepared for it.
It's absolutely terrifying. So of all the projects you've done, 150-ish, I mean, this has got a rate among the most significant.
Yeah, David Tice, he was a producer. He produced Soul Surfer, that movie.
Yes.
And he's a patriot and a really smart individual. And he called me up because he created this movie, Grid Down, Power Up. That's the name of it. And asked me if I wanted to be involved, and I'd seen that 60 Minutes episode, you know, about the geothermal event happening like that. And I just said yes, because I remember it really frightened me when I saw it. And then I, like everybody else, had just gone on and forgot it, because we have so many threats that are right in front of us.
Right.
Yeah, that, you know, this gets pushed to the background.
Seems like a pretty obvious one, though.
Yeah, and it's always the one you don't see. You know, it's that gets you. It gives us feet of clay, basically. You know, we may be the big bad, greatest nation on earth, the United States, with all our. But in some ways, all of this technology, this highly industrial complex that we've built is. Has feet of clay because of this little simple thing.
It's kind of perfect though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it is Tower of Babel stuff, like people build this.
Yeah, it's the Trojan horse.
Hey, it's Glenn Beck, and I want to thank you for tuning in to my friend Tucker Carlson on TCN. And I want to introduce you to Preborn. When I decided I could no longer stay out of the fight to save our nation's unborn souls, I turned to the Ministry of Preborn. They are doing the critical work of saving expectant moms and giving them support to keep their baby. Preborn partners with pregnancy clinics nationwide to offer free ultrasounds for moms facing unplanned pregnancies. The statistics are clear. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. Every day, they rescue 200 precious babies at Preborn. It is a miracle. They not only rescue the babies, but they rescue the moms as well. All gifts are tax deductible. Will you join us in the fight for the Preborn?
For just $28, you can sponsor one ultrasound. To save a baby's life, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 keyword baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com/Tucker. That's preborn.com/Tucker.
Does social engineering from leftist corporations make you feel like we're living in the Twilight Zone? You're not alone. Pure Talk knows the silent majority is fed up. It's time to join the masses who have fled their old wireless company for something better. Pure Talk. Those of you who always have your neighbors back, who've pulled yourselves up by your bootstraps, who realize a little bit of elbow grease can fix just about anything. Pure Talk wants you. Get phenomenal coverage on America's most dependable 5G network for half the price of the other guys. With unlimited plans starting at just $20 a month, the average family saves almost $1,000 a year. And as a veteran-owned company, PureTalk is a company you can feel proud to do business with. Just go to puretalk.com/Tucker to join your fellow Americans and make the switch. That's puretalk.com/Tucker and save an additional 50% off your first month. With Pure Talk.
Looking back on all we were talking off air about all the movies that you've done, what are the ones that you remember most vividly?
Well, The Right Stuff is my favorite.
Why?
Period. Because it was when I grew up in Houston, John Glenn went up. I was in the second grade, they rolled the TV in. Everybody that replaced wanting to be a cowboy, everybody wanted to be an astronaut back then. And I grew up wanting to be, and then along came the book, and I read it like in 2 days and wanted to play Gordo Cooper because he was my favorite astronaut back then. He was the youngest one. He was like the rock and roll astronaut.
Yeah.
And then, couldn't believe it, I got the part. And then it turned out Gordo Cooper lived 3 miles from me in L.A.
No way.
So I called him up, and we became good friends, and he turned me on to a flight school, and I learned to fly. I got my pilot's license from that, and still flying, fly jets now, in fact. But it was like the ultimate boyhood fantasy, that role. And it took 9 months to do it, and Chuck Yeager, legendary Chuck Yeager, was on the set every day. So it was a great time.
It sounds unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you were saying off camera that when you started, I think your first movie that you were in or around was 1975. How long did it take to make a movie then?
It was at least 3 months, to make a movie back then because of the cameras. You'd shoot one side of a scene, and then you got what they call turn around and shoot the other person going the other way and seeing the background the other way. And the lights and the cameras that we had at the time meant that it was at least a 2 to 4 hour turnaround. So you just sit in your trailer and wait for that to happen. Now all that happens like in 15 minutes. And so movies just move really quick.
But if you're taking, months out of your life to go to a location far from your home and you're in this like biosphere with all the other actors. And
right.
That's like its own world. Right?
Yeah. That's exactly. And it's real time consuming. That's the reason. Now you see actors, doing maybe like 3-4 movies a year because it doesn't take that long.
Huh.
It's not that they're so picky.
You must get to know the other people on set pretty well.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. yeah, it becomes your, you know, it becomes your world. You're, it's a gypsy life, basically, being an actor. And, you know, still work a lot, and but spend a lot more time at home now.
But I mean, which I like. For decades, you must have spent, like, no time at home.
Yeah, but that's your life.
Huh.
You know?
What's the most fun location?
It's better than working for a living.
Oh, I agree.
You put it
that
way, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the coolest locations to shoot a movie at?
Oh, I've been everywhere. I did one in Svalbard. This was a television streaming series. Svalbard has the northernmost airport in the world. It's up there, Longyearbyen, and it is where Admiral Perry is last stop before the North Pole. It's above Greenland. It's
wow.
400 miles from the North Pole, like the North Star, which, if you know, here in our where we are in our latitudes, you know, it's about like right there, about 45 degrees. There, it was up here, and we were inside the Arctic Circle, which means the Northern Lights. You see a complete circle of it. It was like being on another planet.
So the Earth is round. You're confirmed.
The Earth is completely round.
Okay, so but you know that.
Yeah. Yes.
Where were
I can confirm that. They had a great little hotel there. It's kind of a tourist spot for people to come. There were 1,500 people there and 3,000 polar bears, they like to say. And that's an interesting community, actually, because it was started by an American, which is Goodyear. Goodyear tires.
Yeah.
It was that guy went over there because they had a lot of coal there on that island. And he started a coal mine, and people from all over the world came there because it was guaranteed work. And that so it was extremely diverse within that, and it still continues to be that today. It's where a lot of people would come there to get like an EU passport. So you had, like, at the time that I was living there, there were like 800 people from Thailand there. And you can only stay there like 2 years. And you're not allowed to die there.
Really?
Yeah, because you can't be buried there.
They're pretty strict
about no
dying.
There's no such thing as, yeah. It's supposedly kind of owned by Norway, but it's also the same place where we had our listening post, observation post during the Cold War. If the ICBMs were coming over from Russia, because they come over, and then 2 miles from where we had ours, the Russians had theirs. And that little town is like a ghost town. That's another little tourist spot there. It's a fascinating place to go.
And no dying.
No dying allowed.
It's a death-free
zone.
Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds in stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com, promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
As another critical election draws near, it's not only about casting your vote, it's about elevating your voice. AMAC is more than just a senior discount organization. Just look at their recent victories. AMAC members pushed forward an investigation into practices that inflate drug prices, successfully defeated ranked choice voting, and also helped block a federal takeover of elections. As AMAC's membership grows, Washington listens. Every new member strengthens this movement. If you love America, visit amac.us/Tucker to become a 4-year member for just $30. AMAC is not only better for America, it's better for you. Membership gives you access to the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare guidance, money-saving discounts, trusted news, sweepstakes, and more. Take advantage of our election year sale, 4 years for just $30. By joining with 2 million members, they cannot ignore your voice. Join now at amac.us/Tucker. That's amac.us/Tucker.
So you brought a guitar.
Yeah.
Tell us about your interest in music.
I've been playing guitar. Music was first for me, really, you know, from the time I was 12. You can't act alone in your room. I guess you can.
Many
I guess you can,
tried.
But there's no one to act with. And acting is reacting for me. But music is, you know, is a thing that your friend as a kid, and that was kind of like music acting. I didn't know. And it became acting, but music has always been laced in there, and I've always had a band, and I knew I was never going to shred a guitar, but I took up songwriting to go with that.
How hard is that?
Songwriting? It's not a question of being hard. I think if you ask any songwriter, it's like an affliction. It's something that you either have or you don't, and you get an idea that's a song or whatever, and it's going to bother you until you finish it.
Do you have some working their way out of you right now?
Yeah, at this moment.
Can you play one?
Has nothing to do with EMPs.
No, good. I need a respite
I would
from
say,
that.
Well,
that was
I would play a song. I tell you what, I'll play you a song that I think probably applies to you, Tucker.
All right.
As well. I wrote this because of Chris Christopherson, he and Kenya Tucker and Randy Carlock did a song of mine that's going to be out.
Did you know Chris Christopherson?
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. Fantastic. But his wife said that nobody calls Chris because they think he's such a legend.
He
wouldn't take the call, you know? So.
But does he want people to call?
He wants people to call. So now in my act, when I get up to playing this song, I call his wife, Lisa, and we all leave a message where the entire audience says, hello, Chris. It's good. But I found that myself, dude, it's about me as well, but because when you get to after a certain age, after 60, people start giving you undue respect for things. You know,
I look forward to that.
By calling you legend, right? Legend. So I wrote this song for that. Please don't call me legend. My humble life's not through. It's got a beginning, a middle, but there still ain't no end to what I might yet do. I might just climb all the Himalayas, plant a flag on a planet or two. But if you call me legend again, please wait until I'm in my tomb. Oh, and please don't treat me special. It makes me feel alone. How can I be the simple person I've always been if you put me up on some throne? I'm quite capable of making my own mistakes, and I'm not afraid of failure. So if you call me legend again, I might just have to see you later. One more verse. Please don't call me legend. It makes me feel like I already died. That's just a third-hand story about some has-been, and it's probably a lie. So I'll just keep on keeping on trucking year after year. And if you call me legend again, I might just have to box your ears, you know I will. I might just have to see you later, bye-bye. I might just have to see you later.
Excellent! That was awesome!
You're welcome, Tucker.
I love that! I love that kind of music. How would you describe that?
That, I don't know, Americana, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Good old summertime, that one.
That's amazing. Yeah. When did you write that?
About 2 years ago.
Yeah. In rage?
That was,
I mean, there are threats of violence in the song,
after,
I'm just
that
saying.
That was after meeting Chris, that episode. Kind of sparked that idea.
Who are your favorite musicians? Who do you listen
to? Well, he was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm going through the Frank Sinatra songbook.
Really?
Yeah. Because there was nobody could sing like Frank. I mean, it just as a musician, you know, the voice is an instrument, and his phrasing, and incredible. You know, Jerry Lee Lewis was like,
yeah,
he was one of my piano teachers when I did the Great Balls of Fire.
You knew him?
Yeah, he was by the whole time we're doing the movie. He's right over my back, going, "You're getting it wrong, son." So he was really quite an amazing human being in all kinds of ways.
I was an animal.
Yeah.
What was John Prine like?
John Prine, yeah, he was just a sweetheart of a person. Really extremely talented. Oh. And it's such a pure musician.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't about the fame and fortune for him as much as it was about the music. And as a songwriter, I mean, nobody could turn a phrase like him.
Kind of by himself in that category.
Yeah.
But he never really became a household name.
Yeah, but a lot of people know him. And it's, and his music will go on. I mean, you take somebody like Kris Kristofferson, you know, I think that's really kind of the measure. I take a song like Bobby McGee.
Yeah.
They'll be singing 500 years from now.
100%.
You know?
But no one will, everyone thinks Janis Joplin wrote it.
Yeah. But it's okay.
She didn't.
Yeah. I particularly like songs that sound like they were written by anonymous. You know, a lot of those American songs that like written on the frontier that
just people, traditional on it.
Exactly.
Did you ever know Willie Nelson?
Yeah. Yeah, I've played with Willie Nelson, in fact, on stage a couple of times.
What's he like?
He's a very generous man, and I mean, gosh, what his contribution to music, and he's still doing it, man. He's still doing it just as great as ever.
Yeah, he's like 90 years old.
Yeah.
In the end, looking back on your life, are you more excited about making movies or playing music?
Living life.
Yeah.
That's what it is for me now. You know, it's like, my autobiography is going to be called My Lucky Life, because I've really gotten a chance to do so many kinds of things that I never would have thought I could have done. And at this point, you know, my movie career, which has been so fantastic, it's so fulfilling, really. I enjoy it so much more now, making movies, because I'm not trying to get anywhere. I'm not trying to attain something. I'm just doing the things that really interest me. And, you know, that keeps the joy in life.
Of course.
You know.
Do you think that, you know, in 30 years, Hollywood will still be a creative force?
I don't know. I really don't know. It seems to be spreading out.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to get a Hollywood started in Texas, actually. We're trying to bring filmmaking there as an industry, not just as a destination
right. For
Hollywood, you know. And, I mean, the way it is now, not so many movies are made in California anymore anyway.
Right.
And a lot of the ones that I see in the previews, they all look like the same movie.
Yeah.
You know, a few really sneak by there every once in a while.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
So I gotta end it with the question I ask everybody, but I'm just interested, like, where do you see the country in a year?
In a year?
Yeah.
Well, I'm really tense about next year.
Yeah.
The election year. It seems that, you know, more than any other time, it's everybody's gotta like pick a side.
Yeah.
And It's both Democrats and the Republicans. I'm an independent, by the way, and always have been. I voted both ways, you know, according to what the pendulum I thought the country needed. But both sides seem to think that our country is going to be doomed. It's that democracy is going to be over if one or the other wins.
Yes.
And so how do we get to that place where we can have that transition of power like we did not so long ago, right, where at least people could tolerate it without having to, you know, basically have a coup in one way or another,
yes,
a military coup. We really are, I'm afraid of us becoming like a banana republic like that. And we're the United States of America. We're Americans.
Yes.
And I do believe, I mean, things are a little bit more, they're scarier than the word 68. I mean, Bobby Kennedy was shot, Martin Luther King was shot, all the riots, you know, cities were burning. But we knew who the leaders were back then, you know. But
yes,
now it's just this kind of underground simmering rage on both sides, and setting aside who's right, who's wrong, or whatever, I just think we need to find ways to unite. And America's always found a way to unite. Back when they were making forming the Constitution, the Kane, the other senator, in fact, in the chambers. It got really bitter. It was always about to fall apart.
You know,
it's fragile. And Reagan is right. You know, our democracy is only, you know, can be lost in a generation.
Yes.
It only takes a generation to lose it. You know, and I think we need to educate our kids what a great country this is, and that we're, in spite of our way we don't agree, that we agree to that we're Americans. And so God bless us. I just like to see cooler heads prevail.
Do you feel that there are cooler heads out there?
Yeah, I think as individuals we have cooler heads. You know, it's the mob that whether it be on the right or the left or somewhere else,
yeah,
you know, that it gets confusing. You know,
very.
It gets really confusing.
Well, I hope I see you in a year.
I think it will, Tucker.
I think so, too. That's good.
Either here or in Maine.
Yeah, here or in Maine. It's great to see you. Thank you.
On that note,
amen.
Thank you very much for having me.